If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Joseph Sternberg, my colleague. He is in London. He writes for the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, where he's a member of the editorial board. His column is Political Economics. And within these last days, he has published a column reminding the United States that the EU not only is our ally, but also has different ambitions than the United States. And that doesn't make it at odds with us. It just means that their vision of the future is different than the U.S.'s. We begin with the question of, is it popular? Is the European Union, 27 states, joined in a common purpose? Is it popular among the people who are served by it? Joe, a very good evening to you. Thank you. The YouGov poll says yes. Do we trust the YouGov poll? And what do we make of the fact that what is popular is also often knocked by the people who are in favor of it? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Yes, I mean, I think that the key point is that the European Union as an institution does seem to be much more popular among actual, real, live, living, breathing Europeans than I think a lot of Americans would expect. And this is important because we're talking about this against the backdrop of that national security strategy that the Trump administration released a couple weeks ago now. And there's a long section in that about Europe, where the complaint is basically that Europe is facing a form of civilizational erasure, that this is a result of bad immigration policies, an unwillingness to invest in their own defense, and also that the European Union itself is a big part of the problem. And so the proposal from the Trump administration is that the U.S. should start supporting politicians and political parties within Europe who are antagonistic toward the European Union as an institution, who are anti-elitism, who supposedly would better represent the Europeans in that kind of issue and can be allies to the U.S. in dismantling this institution that allegedly is bad for U.S. interests. So the first question has to be, is any of that based in reality? And the short answer is that it's not. Europeans don't seem to perceive the European Union as a big threat to their sovereignty, and they don't seem to dislike it any more than they dislike their national government. So, I mean, it's true that when you travel around Europe or if you look at opinion polls, you hear a lot of grumbling about the European Union from a lot of people for a lot of reasons. But one thing that I've come to realize over the years that I've lived in Europe is that understand that in the same way that an Iowan or a New Yorker might complain to you about Washington. They have a lot of things that they are unhappy about with the federal government, but no one is currently suggesting that anyone should secede from it. And something similar is happening over here in Europe. So some of the evidence are opinion polls, like polling from YouGov, other firms who are often asking voters in opinion polls what they think about the EU. And the result is generally that despite various misgivings, Europeans are happy that their countries are in the European Union. If they were asked in a referendum, they would vote to stay in it. Those countries that have the euro currency, people are happy with that, even though it's an even bigger imposition on national sovereignty than ordinary EU membership is. And, you know, this polling data is backed up by anecdotal political evidence. I mean, there are a lot of political parties around Europe that started out opposing EU membership for their country, whether that was France, Italy, Germany, Spain, the Netherlands. And the thing that they all have in common is that as those parties become more popular, they become less anti-EU. And you can argue that they become more popular because they become less anti-EU. That makes them acceptable to a wider electorate. So I think it's important for the Trump administration and everyone else to understand in Washington that there are a lot of reasons to not like the European Union. There are a lot of reasons for America to be exasperated with the EU and with Europe. But you cannot have a realistic U.S. foreign policy that is based on the notion that Europeans are going to rise up and dismantle the EU.
Then we come to the tension. The United States, represented by the Vice President, Mr. Vance, and the very well-to-do and prominent Mr. Musk, find the European Union unattractive and have said so bluntly, and have even visited AfD, representing a dissenting party in Germany and a dissenting party for much of the comity that other countries express. All of that is because of values, Joe. I don't think the European Union at this point can be said to be costing the U.S. money, although it has. But values, what values are at odds between Mr. Vance and Mr. Musk and the European Union?
Well, I mean, one of the complaints in the Trump administration national security strategy, which, I mean, we need to recognize is largely the brainchild of Vice President J.D. Vance and his circle. So we can talk about him as, you know, being the one who has had a lot of the ideas in this document. They have a bunch of complaints about European values. I mean, one is an observation that Europe's political values on issues like free speech or freedom of religion are increasingly diverging from U.S. values. So, for example, European governments are far more likely to impose more onerous restrictions on free speech than the U.S. Constitution would allow in America. And, you know, Vance and others in the U.S. sort of turn that into an argument that, you know, because of these aspects of Europe's political culture, it's not really democratic, it doesn't share our values, and therefore it's not worth defending. So, I mean, that's part of it. I think that there is a certain amount of unease in these circles in the U.S. about Europe's open-door immigration policies. And guess what? There's a lot of unease about that in Europe as well, which is why mainstream parties are starting to tackle a lot of that in response to public frustration expressed in elections. So I think that is part of the issue. And then I think that there's a broader question about the economy, in the sense that the European economy is growing very slowly now. It's very sclerotic. You know, there's this widening prosperity gap between the U.S. and Europe. It's a hostile operating environment for a lot of American companies, including Elon Musk's social platform X, formerly known as Twitter, which was recently on the receiving end of a regulatory fine from Europe for reasons that are kind of nonsensical. So, yeah, I mean, it's, if you were to evaluate the EU just on the merits, you could say, and I think a lot of Europeans do say, the EU is currently getting the balance wrong on issues like speech regulation. They're doing a terrible job of economic management, and the EU is responsible for the slow growth in Europe. But you can make an argument from that the EU needs to reform itself, which is what some politicians are trying to do right now. It doesn't necessarily follow that the U.S.'s, that America's own best interest lies in supporting those political elements within Europe that are still kind of on the fringe or not necessarily mainstream, and that are antagonistic to the EU in a way that most European voters won't end up supporting.
Does the fact that the United Kingdom left the EU influence the decision by the Trump administration to be critical of the EU? Is that a cross current?
Well, I do think that American conservatives in general, and the Trump administration in particular, often have to be careful about the United Kingdom, because I think that the tendency is to think that the United Kingdom is more like us Americans than other Europeans, that the Brits have more of our free market tradition, our traditions of political freedom. And we also, you know, American conservatives in particular, tend to absorb a lot of conservative media and political discussion from the UK that is particularly hostile to the EU. And I think that the notes of caution about that are, first off, one thing that Britain has learned with a crash over the past 10 years, that actually in terms of public attitudes toward regulation and the state and the economy and social welfare spending and the rest of it, Britain itself is much more European than American. So I think already you have this issue that the UK and the US are very similar in a lot of respects, but we're also very different in a lot of ways. I think Americans need to be aware of that. And I think that we also need to understand that Britain has a very different history with regard to the EU, and had a very different relationship with the EU when Britain was still in it than other European publics and other European governments have. So the fact that the Brits voted to leave does not mean that other Europeans will do so. In fact, I think you could argue a lot of European voters have looked at Britain's difficulties since Brexit and have said, this proves that for all of the problems, maybe we're better off staying inside.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. We're going to the United Kingdom to ask this question. One of your citizens is being tortured by the Chinese Communist Party, has been for 5 years. He's got diabetes, he's 78 years old, and he needs to be free. What are you doing about it? Jimmy Lai. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is Julian Edelman from Dudes on Dudes with Gronk and Jules. Sunday mornings, I've got my game day ritual. Coffee, lucky socks, and now new morning Uncrustable sandwiches.
It's all about that 12-gram protein boost with the new Uncrustables Bright-Eyed Berry or Up and Apple flavors.
Bright-Eyed Berry's got a feisty receiver energy.
Up and Apple, your classic do-it-all tight end.
Soft, pillowy, packed with protein, and easy enough for Gronk to grab from the freezer.
Whether you're on the couch, driving to the tailgate, or heading to the locker room, new morning Uncrustable sandwiches are the MVP of snacks.
Your new Sunday kickoff ritual starts here with new morning Uncrustable sandwiches packed with 12 grams of protein.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No